Quantum Bigfoot is the name of the book by Ron Moorhead. In this half hour, we'll have him explain what he means by that. And we'll hear a couple of more clips of these recordings. You know, we've had a lot of witnesses all over the world who say they've seen these creatures here and there on multiple continents. And there are a couple of recordings, video-wise or film. And Ron brings to the table several dozen audio recordings. They've been analyzed. We'll get into details in this half hour about what those analyses have shown, and then we'll open up the phone lines with your calls and questions a little bit later. Stick around. More Coast to Coast AM to come. Ron Moorhead, before the break, we were mentioning about how some people have tried to fake Bigfoot films or Bigfoot evidence. You know, occasionally you see somebody with a giant imprint of a Bigfoot, and they try to make their own tracks. And I kind of laugh at it at times because, although that does happen, you find these tracks out in the middle of nowhere. You know, you come across some tracks miles and miles from where anyone would be. The idea that someone would make fake tracks in a place where the chances of it being found are pretty unlikely is preposterous.
So yes? True. Yeah. Plus, the tracks, one of the professors that I speak with often, he studies the tracks, and they have what they call dermal ridges in them, which suggested they can't be faked. And that's why I got him on the subject, really, because he realizes those tracks are not fake. They're real. But, yeah, there's people that will still try to do that. There's this one guy that said he faked it with a couple boards years ago, and he confessed on his deathbed that was his tracks. Well, that's pretty ridiculous if you think about it, all the tracks that are seen everywhere else, plus the tracks that we encountered up there. But yeah, there's fakes out there. There's people fake the Bigfoot heads, the sightings, all kinds of stuff. But again, the proof's in the pudding. It's going to be forensically studied if they bring it forward, and that's going to show it one way or the other. Hard to fool some of these guys. They're pretty well on it. I'm happy to be associated with them.
Well, there's a little. Get to a couple of recordings and you can tell us how they were analyzed and what the conclusions were. The third clip we're going to play is called Talk to Us, and it definitely sounds like a conversation. Here it goes.
Who's trying to talk to us?
So what was going on there?
Well, that was me in 1974. That's the first time they really started interacting with us while we're outside the shelter. And that's the night that I saw one, too, by the way. But they was asking me something. I was saying, it just went on for an hour that night, and just me and one other guy was up there. We packed their food into the horses and mules and getting ready for the season later on. And don't know what they were saying. Still don't know. We had the tape that you heard before was studied by the University of Wyoming. This one wasn't, because it wasn't the original tape. My original tape burned up with fire. But the other one, and he claimed that the sound was above the human range, inside the human range, and below the human range, which gives them a very flexible vocal mechanism, and which also suggests that they could mimic just about any forest animal they wanted to. Including people, if they want to mimic people. And I've heard a lot of reports saying, hey, I heard my name called, I heard my dog's name being called from the woods, and nobody's around.
Yeah, there's a couple of lines in the book about that there, that would be really, I don't know, that'd be pretty creepy.
A lot of stuff going on. These things will toy with people. I mean, they will. I don't know if it's why they do that, but they seem to think that we think we're smarter than them, and unfortunately most people think we are smarter than them, because they just got to be an ape in the woods, right? Well, they're more than that, believe me, a lot more than that. And if people stop underestimating them, they might have a better chance of encountering and getting some more evidence and more encounters. But the researchers that I deal with, until they have a personal experience with some enigma, they're not going to ever buy into that. And that's the problem that most of them have. They don't open their minds. They think they're just an ape in the woods, and that's what they got to be. So that's what they try to form them to be. And anything else outside of that paradigm is going to be discarded. And that's too bad, because that's not science. It's not open-mindedness. That's just too bad.
You know, you hear stories, or I've read stories over the years about sounds that allegedly were made by a Sasquatch, banging a tree and banging rocks together. And every once in a while, rocks are thrown into a campsite, to sort of scare people away or as a warning of some sort. And obviously, that's not a bear. That's not a mountain lion doing that.
Right.
Is it
Yeah, bears and
ever?
mountain lions don't throw rocks.
Yeah. Do they has it, have these creatures ever harmed any humans that you know of?
Not that I know of, but then if the human don't come back, you don't know what went on.
Right.
So the ones that come back say they were friendly, and the ones that deal with them, because I think there are friendly ones, and there's some that are malevolent. They're just not good at all.
Well, there's the story of the guy who says he was kidnapped and held for 5 or 6 days. I know that was a long time ago,
That was
but what do you
Albert
make of that
Osman,
one?
yeah. That was also 1924. Yeah, that was in British Columbia. I researched that pretty thoroughly, me and a couple other researchers. And, well, anyway, I got my whole story written about that in Quantum Bigfoot.
Well, what do you tell us? What do you think?
Well, he wasn't in Toba Inlet. That's what I think. That's what we all thought. We studied the story real carefully from John Green's book, Apes Among Us, and went up there. I flew up there. I have an airplane, and I was flying, and we flew up there, flew into Camel River, and went and had a helicopter on standby there, and then went over to in my plane the next day and circled that whole area looking for the bowl that he said he was held in. And we never could find the bowl, but it didn't make sense, the distance from where he left and going to Toba Inlet, and the timing and what he said he saw from Toba Inlet was not seeable from where we went looking. And I think he was in it. I think the story is true. I think he was interviewed. He was interviewed in 1953 by John Green. This happened to him in 1934. I think he looked at a map and said, "That's where I was," but he wasn't there. He was in one of the several inlets prior to that. There's other inlets there. So, kind of wanted to go back and do that again, but never have done it. We're just going to go
I'm
in there and
listening
look for
to.
snuff cans or anything that he supposedly left there. And see if there was any evidence that he'd been there. That would have been a fun thing to
To
do.
play one more clip. It's called Rapid Fire Sequence, Michael. It's not the one I had in order, but Rapid Fire Sequence. And when we come out of it, I want to ask you about the crypto linguistic guy and what work he did and what he makes of this one. That's pretty wild. Whatever was being said there, they were packing a lot in those couple of sentences. So, what do you make of that? It was there one
There were
or
two.
multiple?
It was, according to the sound expert, it was a male and a female, and they were, we think, arguing amongst themselves about the food. That's what we think. At the time, we didn't know what to think because that was made in 1972, and that's when you didn't really still didn't know what you were dealing with for sure, if they were going to be aggressive or not. And so you hear that sound right outside your shelter, and one thing that I can't emphasize enough is the amplitude. These things are so loud, it just jars you. Even when they walk around, you feel like it's a two-legged elephant or something. And anyway, that was what that was about. And that is significant of language, what you just heard. That's the cryptolinguist has studied that. He's got 30 years experience on listening, and he's transcribed the language out of it. been very well vetted. I didn't know a man like that existed, but he's very well trained to do just that. A regular linguist won't be able to do what he did, and he's got what they call perfect hearing. And anyway, so
he has military training, military experience, worked for the government. He volunteers to help you with this. Has he figured it out? I mean, could you interpret some of what you're hearing?
No, he can't. He can only transcribe it as a language. Until you get one of them to come in and point to a tree and say, ooga, ooga, that's a tree. You don't know that's a tree in their language. You don't know what everything means. What he does find in a lot of it is a certain sound at the end of each sentence, like the end of sentence, which is not unusual for some languages. But what they're saying, and we don't know.
What about DNA? You mentioned that earlier, and I thought maybe you were referencing Melba Ketchum because you mentioned her in your book, Quantum Bigfoot. What do you make about the samples that she had? I mean, before she went public with that, she had shared the information with a couple of us and seemed pretty interesting.
Well, it is, and I think she got a rough go of it. I mean, she, because they said it was contaminated. Well, she swears I'm done with it contaminated, but the reason they say that probably is because they couldn't match it to any of the other, in the gene bank, any of the other DNA. But she went so far as to get the nuclear DNA, which is the male and female, so you know what the male counterpart was. And she went in to give her opinion of it, and that would maybe been her mistake, I'm not sure. But they discredited that just because it had human DNA in the mitochondria, which is the maternal side. And they're finding that out more and more with different samples they catch and get different geneticists look at it, that as soon as they see the human DNA in it, they say, well, it must have been contaminated because it's got human DNA in it. Well, baloney. They just got to open their minds up that maybe this is a hybrid and the maternal side is human. And that's what I think anyway. And that goes right into, really gets into Greek mythology, gets into biblical history about celestial beings and breeding humans. And I think there's been no telling how many different aliens on this earth, on this planet, and what they've done manipulating DNA is anybody's guess. But if they just pulled out a primate and manipulated the DNA, or even a human, there's a lot of stories about the native lore says that these things take their women and have taken them and bred with them. And of course, that's in the Bible, too, if you want to get into that. I'm not a religious person, but I am spiritual-minded, like a lot of people are. I believe there's a lot going on that we don't see with our three-dimensional eyes. And if we just open up to the fact that there's reality is not necessarily the only thing you're seeing with your five senses, there's a lot more going on.
Well, the quantum world, thus that your title, the Quantum Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Give us the broad strokes of what you mean.
Because
the idea that Bigfoot comes from some other reality, slips in and out of our world, is pretty exotic.
Yeah, you know, there's people say, well, they're just flesh and blood. Well, they're not just flesh and blood, in my opinion. I think there's been people for a long time were telling me, because I've interviewed a lot of people that supposedly had sightings and all, they track them and the footprints just stop. Don't go anywhere else. And until that happened to me, which it did happen to me, my daughter saw one, and I started following the tracks, and they just stopped. I look up in the trees, or could have jumped on the tree. No. Did it jump over to a boulder? No. Did it go in the brush? No. It's just nowhere. Well, what do they do? How do they do that? I think it all goes right into the quantum theory, which is vibrational frequency. We're all energy at the finest minute level. We are all energy. And I get into that in my book, how there is a science behind how they could just go out of our perception. And I believe they do that with their vocal mechanism. It is so much more complex than ours. And I think that's probably how they do it. But that's just my opinion. We don't know.
These cases where Bigfoot are seen in connection with UFOs, that would make a lot of your colleagues and the Sasquatch field very uncomfortable, I would think. It makes UFO people uncomfortable, too.
UFO people are pretty much into it. There's a lot of reports now of these things being seen around UFOs. And like I mentioned earlier, this one gentleman that I talked to, and he's very credible. He didn't know how to tell me all this stuff because he hadn't talked about it to anybody. And he's a firefighter, actually. And he's been seeing these things back where he hunts, which isn't that far from where our camp was. It's in the same general area, within a few miles. But he's seen a Bigfoot. Actually, he was bow hunting, and this deer ran across this meadow and just stopped dead at the other side and turned around and shot back towards him, which is very, very unusual. Hunters don't see that very often. Come right back past him. And he looked over there. He thought it must be a bear or something over there, and a Bigfoot stepped out. And at the same time, he was also witnessing a UFO, and he watched, this in daytime, and he's seen it for, he said, 30 minutes. He watched him and his friend watch this UFO hovering over this mountain. So I think there's a connection. There's just been too many reports saying that. How they disappear, there is a science behind that that can happen. They're not cloaking with some blanket like the military has or like it's out there. But they are doing it, I think, through vibrational frequencies. And I explain all that in my book, The Quantum Bigfoot.
Let me ask you this. You mentioned at the beginning of the interview that this area where you'd been going to interact with these things for all these years, that it was wiped out by fire. I'm sure you had to think, man, I wonder if whatever they are, if they made it, if they moved.
Well, we don't know what happens to them during the fires because there's a lot of fires right now in California. So if they are interdimensional, they probably don't have a problem at all. If they're just flesh and blood and nothing else, then heaven knows what happens to them. They either run from it, sense it. Here in June, same spot, actually two different people reported being ran out by some gorilla-sounding type entity. They didn't see it, but it was really making some bad noises at them. So they left. They were fishing, not where we are, but just a couple miles away, a few miles away, I should say. So there's a lot of reports. So these things may sense when a fire is coming, like most animals do, because they probably have a collective consciousness, like a lot of animals do. You know, when you see birds flocking all together or fish spool all together, they're not talking to each other. They're collectively quantum entangling each other. And that's what we can do, too, as humans. That's why I get into that in my book. I think we underestimate what we are, and these things are probably a step above us, and I know that's going to rub some people wrong, but we're not the sharpest knife in the drawer, I don't think, on this earth. These things know how to get along. They know how to survive. A lot of Native Americans have them as their spiritual guide. There's a lot of information out there, these people that don't believe they even exist. I don't even try to convince people they exist. First of all, if they got a language, and they do, these tapes have been shown not to be speeded up, slowed down, manipulated anyway by the University of Wyoming. Professor Curlin studied them for a whole year, and they're real. Of course, we know they're real, but until you get a PhD behind it, you know, you're not going to get a lot of people's attention. So, anyway, they're real.
You got any of those guys who, the academics who've looked at the tapes, have studied it for a year, are they willing to write a paper about it?
Well, Dr. Curlin did. It's in a book, yeah. Man Like Monsters on Trial. He presented that at the Anthropology of the Unknown in British Columbia in 1978, actually, after his study. And his whole report is in that book.
What about smell? Because you get reports over the years of a strong musk odor in some of the Bigfoot encounters. Did you smell anything like that?
No, you know, that's different. No, we didn't up there, and they were very close to us. I mean, they were then just a few feet of our shelter sometimes, and yet we didn't get a foul smell. And I'm not sure if that's something they can emit at will, or if it's something that maybe some of them aren't as clean as others. I don't know, but it's I think it's something they can put off like a skunk if they want to.
We're talking with Ron Moorhead about his book, The Quantum Bigfoot. We just heard a couple of excerpts from the CDs that he's put out, which are full of different recordings of these creatures. In a moment, we open up the phone lines with your calls, questions, and comments, and we'll be right back. Coming up in the next hour, Mike DeMonte joins us, punk rock and UFOs, true believers. But for one more segment, we have Ron Moorhead, the Quantum Bigfoot. We'll take your calls in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. Let's take a couple of calls for Ron Moorhead, our guest, the author of Quantum Bigfoot, Wildcard Line, Jason in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Jason.
It's a total honor to speak with you. I met you and Jeremy Corbell in McMinnville this last May. I'm the guy that told the story about the craft hovering, dropping the blue lights.
Yeah, yeah. That's an awesome gathering up there in McMinnville.
Awesome.
What's on your mind?
In the Coast Range out of McMinnville back about 20 years ago in the late 90s, I was up there fishing at a mountain lake, very small lake. Everybody else had left. I was the last one there. It was early November, which I believe is like mating season for a lot of wildlife. And I heard something I will never forget. And I've heard it played on Coast to Coast multiple times, but I have not heard this recording played for years. I don't know if, you know, somebody thought it was a hoax and stopped playing it, but it's for real. And this sound, so I want to ask your guest if he's ever heard this or heard anybody else that has heard this. It was a loud scream that was like an introduction to what I heard next. And it was a series of these, like, the only way I can describe it, and I don't think any human throat could possibly reproduce it, but it was like a series of musical notes, and they were very steady. They were like hitting them with like pinpoint accuracy, and they were going high and then low and then high and then low, but each one was different. But they would go above and then below, and then it would be like hitting like an A, a D, a B, a C, an A, a E, you know.
Well, let's ask Ron if he's familiar with that. Ron, anything like that?
Well, all I have is the recordings we have. I hear a lot of reports of screams and yells, but and it could possibly be from a Bigfoot, and especially if they have different intonations like that. Because nothing surprises me around these things, so nothing surprises me. They can mimic just about anything according to the people that I've had looking at these sounds. And they can probably reproduce just about any sound they want to at the time. So,
do you get recordings that people might think is a Bigfoot, and then you do some analysis and an expert will come up with another explanation? Oh, that's a mountain lion, that's a bear, that's whatever.
Yeah. I'm part of an Olympic project up here, and there's a gentleman, David, here, who does work on that. He's been actually grafting that stuff so that you can see what a wolf sounds like, what a mountain lion sounds like, and what a Bigfoot scream might sound, and what they look like. Not just the sound, but you can see the sound on a graft, and that'll tell you the difference. It might sound like a wolf, but it, or a bear or mountain lion, but if it doesn't look like one, because you can see that difference. So anyway, there's people doing that. So there's a lot of people interested in this now. I'm very pleased that it's getting out there in the public's eyes.
We'll go west of the Rockies, James in Arizona. Hey, James, you're on with Ron Moorhead.
Hi, I'm just glad to have the opportunity to share this with you. Back in March of 2012, it was just a little bit after midnight, I was driving down the Interstate 17 coming through a place called Badger Springs. And in the headlights in the distance, I could see something, a tall figure that was crossing the interstate. And I slowed down, and it was a tall creature carrying a small creature on the side of their hip. And I slowed down, and I watched it cross the interstate and then go across into like an open area where a wash was. So I slowed down, and I pulled over, and I just got out and looked around. I couldn't see anything. The following morning, I got up really bright and early and went back there, and I could see where there was something had been digging around in the shoulder of the bank of this dry wash. and it looked like it was trying to dig out like roots in the shoulder. And I was curious if what their diet is and what they're feeding on. Now that I've seen this, I've just been out there looking for years now, and I was able to come across some Indian petroglyphs in that area that show stick figures with big feet. And I just wanted to share that with you and see what your opinion on that was.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, they're omnivorous like we are. They can eat like we do. They follow the food in the wintertime, so mostly they'll kill deer. We believe them to, they've messed with our deer. They've never taken our deer, but they've moved our deer. And, but they've never, maybe it's out of respect for us because they don't want to, I don't know. But they do follow the food. I've had reports of them being seen in orchards picking fruit. It's omnivorous. That's the best thing I can say for that. It's a good sighting you had. Thanks for that report.
And when you would leave food out for them, would you see them take it or something takes it?
We'd hear them take it. Yeah. Huh? And then when you see their tracks the next morning, you know that's what took it. And, that's something else to be careful. Some people just leave an apple laying out and it's gone the next day, so they think a Bigfoot took it. Well, again, unless you see what did it. Now, we wasn't seeing, but we had the vocalizations, we had the tracks, we had sightings here and there, off and on up there, and so we know what we was dealing with. We just didn't know how to deal with it really and in a proper way. But they were taking our food. We had canned spam we'd take in up there on our horses or mules, and we would sometimes fry that up and leave it out, and they seemed to enjoy that. they took a loaf of bread from my daughter and I one time when we was up there, and just things like that. They,
sandwiches. They're making sandwiches.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
First-time caller, Johnny in North Carolina. Hi, Johnny.
George and Ryan, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I've been listening to the show for over 25 years. Just had a quick question on, Ryan, your shelter that you built up there. I'm probably assuming it just wasn't tents and sleeping bags. I was just wondering if you can describe your shelter.
Yeah, it was like a big beaver's nest. There were trees in a circular form, and we wrapped cables around the trees, laid deadfall upon the cables, then strapped across the trees, cables on top, and then laid deadfall up there, then put plastic over that, heavy plastic, and then put alder brush or something like that on top of that. That kept the rain out of when it would rain. And then we had a log that we put. Two of the trees were kind of on an angle, and we put a log there, and that would be our doorway.
Thanks, Johnny. I'm going east of the Rockies to Joe in Long Island. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Ron. You had mentioned earlier that you had actually traveled to Siberia, Russia, Nepal, and I'm not sure if you said Libya, but I'm wondering how you mapped your those trips out. And did it involve interviewing locals and also any aerial searches?
Yeah, well, I've been doing this for 40 years, so I went on with to South America with a scientist and another group of guys, and we was investigating the long, elongated skulls that were down there. They don't have a sagittal suture going through their head like humans do, so they were a hybrid-type being, and we think that it's inbreeding with the Incas. But we weighed their skulls. We checked it out two different times, and they are not totally human. However, the mitochondrial, the female side again, comes from over in Turkey area, so over in Asia. So you got to wonder, with all that ocean there, there was a common denominator with a lot of this stuff. I supported myself on several of these missions. I got sponsored going into Russia and Siberia. I spoke at the Darwin Museum there, and then they took us over into Siberia to take us to where they'd been seeing the wild man, and we explored that area somewhat. But did that answer your question?
I think so. About Russia, you got a section in the book about it. It seemed like there were a lot of academics who are interested in
They're all over Russia. Yeah, they totally believe it. I was just with Igor here a week or so ago over in Montana, and he gave me his book. Yeah, they're into it. They believe it. They believe in the quantum part of it too. I'm not go that far because our scientists over here just can't get into that part yet. Classical science is what we're all trained in. You know, it's like the Newtonian physics, which came out in 1687. Quantum science is the new science, modern science, which more and more academia are getting into that now because they realize it's not just true in the micro world, but it's true throughout the universe. What classical science doesn't answer, quantum science takes over and does answer. And we call it quantum theory, but really it's proven mathematically. You'll never see it because it is in the micro world. And it goes down to the very smallest part of our bodies, which you can't see with your eyes. We live in a very limited spectrum of our reality, what we think is reality.
Do you ever have any military people or intelligence people come and ask you questions?
Well, I don't know if they're military or not. No, they haven't. No, Men in Black with helicopters, I haven't had
right.
that yet.
Yeah. No. Darn it.
Scott Nelson was retired Navy, though. He was in the Navy for a long time doing this transcriptions of unknown languages. Crypto-language.
Wildcard line, Julie in Danville, Indiana. Hi, Julie. Good morning.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, what's on your mind?
I was wanting to know, this is just an opinion, but I was listening real close when the Ron says that the guy thinks that it's a male and a female talking back and forth. I think it's a male scolding a younger, well, I don't know female or male, but a younger Bigfoot. And it almost sounds like in part of it, he's laughing at it.
Well, that's possible. I mean, I don't know. I'm going by a human sound expert that listened to it, and she seemed to think it was a male and female. And the female won the argument, by the way. Put that out there.
Well, what's new about that?
Yeah, nothing new about that. But there is a young one up there. We know that from the size of tracks in the snow. We found 9-inch tracks and along with an 18-inch track tromping through the snow up there.
So you've seen evidence of family units, mother, father, adolescent, but it sounded like, I'm trying to remember in which of your books, but it sounded like there have been encounters with groups, larger family units.
Yeah, well, they run in families. I mean, we think we had two different families up there between 72 and 74. If you notice the sounds from one of those recordings to the other, there's a difference in the quality or the type of vocalizations they're doing. The cryptolinguist seems to think they actually slowed their rapid chatter down to something that maybe we could understand. And I don't know. He doesn't know either. He just knows the same vocal mechanism created both sounds from 72 to 74.
We're going to go to Randy in Louisiana on the wild card line. Hi, Randy. You're on with Ron Moorhead.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, we were. I live on Toledo Bend Lake in Louisiana, and they flooded this lake like in 68. But one evening, we were, I guess this has been about 15 years ago now, across the cove, there was a lot of virgin timber here. It's been cut out. But there was a scream over there. I mean, it just made your skin crawl. Never heard it after that. But I would hunt in that area. It's kind of a swampy area. And I could smell something, but I couldn't see it. And I wasn't scared. I was kind of scared, but I was also curious, and I went trying to track it just on the smell. It was so strong. And whatever it was, I was in a group of young pine trees, and it was just, you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. It was so thick. But something was in there. And but that scream, I've never heard anything like it, you know, before. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Randy. I'll try to get one more call in. Nancy, west of the Rockies, calling in from Idaho. Hey, Nancy.
For taking my call. My husband and I have had several encounters, and we definitely know they're out there. But I had a question for Mr. Moorhead. Earlier, I think he had talked to Connie Willis and indicated he thought there were two types of Sasquatch, an ancient and a different one. And I was wondering if he still believed that and if he had any further evidence of it.
Well, there's no evidence of that. It's just that that's what we believe. I believe there's different types of these things, depending on what their creator was, if it was an alien or if it was inbreeding with indigenous people. But, yeah, there's, I think, Kalani, he lives in other part of Washington here. He ascribes to that. He says that there's ancient ones, and he communicates with them telepathically, and he's also seen them physically. But there's also the Bigfoots, and there's the ancient ones. They've all been here longer than humans. Which we're hybrids, as far as I'm concerned. We just made by a very special creator. And so anyway, yes, I do believe there's more than one type. Tracks are different. Some can speak, some don't. I don't know all. I hope to know another year from now. I might know a lot more. I hope. I keep chasing this thing. But, anyway,
you got a list of do's and don'ts in your book, Quantum Bigfoot. So this is for the do's, suggestions for people who want to go out and sort of encounter something like this. What are the do's?
Yeah, they're in my book. Just let them be the aggressor. That's the most important thing. You can't make it happen. You got to let it happen. At nighttime, your vibrational frequency settles down to like 8 hertz, and that's the same as the Earth. And I think that's why more people have more encounters during the evening time. I think when you're in your alpha state, just coming out of your beta state of thinking all day long, you're relaxed. That'll help you a lot. Just relax, have fun, and there's a lot of things in my book that I can suggest.
Well, like, for example, smaller groups are better than larger groups, two to four people.
They would feel more secure and more or less exposed. Yeah, I wouldn't go out by myself by any means anymore. But, yeah, three people is a good-sized group. You just need someone to look over your shoulder. And also, if you hear one making a noise at your 12 o'clock position, have somebody with you that can look back behind you, because they're probably trying to divert your attention so one can move away or do something.
You suggest that horses and guns are okay, but don't take dogs.
Yeah, well, in my second CD, I got a report on there of a 911. A guy called the sheriff's department here in Washington, actually, and his dog was killed. And it was thrown 35 feet. And just prior to that, it was a big thump, and it was slung, and he had seen a Bigfoot. He's pretty sure the Bigfoot's what did it, because nothing else could throw a German Shepherd that far. I investigated that, and I believe it to be credible. Dogs, if they start yapping at them, going after them, they're going to kill them. And otherwise, the dogs are going to cower out underneath you, which is fine, too, if you're going to keep your dog.
Well, horses. Ron Moorhead, I've enjoyed the conversation. I enjoyed the book, The Quantum Bigfoot. I'd recommend that people check it out if you're interested in Sasquatch and that mystery. Thanks for joining us and sharing the audio tapes, and we hope to see you again.
Thank you, George. I appreciate being on.
Thanks very much. And in a moment, we switch gears to UFOs and punk rock true believers with Mike DeMonte.